It's Pick Six with Mully and Haw, where we debate the top six sports stories of the day and then open it up to you, the Chicago sports fan. Call us at 312-644-6767, or you can tweet your thoughts at Mully Haw. Pick Six with Mully and Haw starts now.
How concerned are you about the Bears' injury list later today? Are you most worried about offensive lineman Braxton Jones, Tevin Jenkins, now Bill Murray? He's on the IR with a pack. Or is it all about the defensive side, Montez Sweat? How about the quarterback, Kyler Murray? They're going to have to chase him down, right? What about Jaquan Brisker? What about Kyler Gordon?
Yeah, we'll get updates on some of those guys and some of those injuries, and it'll be very interesting. I'm curious about the offensive line. Definitely curious about it. But I think that Montez Sweat is really the guy that matters most on this team. You know, he was not on the field for the Hail Mary. We know that, and they had real issues giving way too much time to the quarterback on that play. Jaden Daniels had all day, and obviously, there were other issues involved, but I think that when you think about a guy like Kyler Murray and what he can do, there were a couple of plays where Sweat was kind of holding containment, and you knew that Jaden Daniels wasn't going to get the edge on him. He just wasn't the way the guy was positioned. So I think that was a big interesting moment for the Bears. You don't want him hurt at all. It's a shin injury. Apparently, we'll get more clarity on that. And then, obviously, with Brisker and Gordon, a couple guys that are out, you'd like to get everybody back and get that secondary back to being the dominant force it is.
Well, Mully, you mentioned Sweat not being on the field, and I know this is part of the question, but not all. That's just one more reason why I think Eberflus erred in not rushing four. When Montez Sweat isn't one of your three, and he's clearly the best rusher you have,
he's worth two.
That you should have had another guy out there. But I'm going to keep saying it, and I'll say it again. I think the Bears win that game if Jaquan Brisker and or Kyler Gordon are on the field against the Commanders in that Hail Mary situation. And I think you need those guys. I really do. And the longer Brisker is out, the more concerned, I know I've been maybe sending up flares on this for going on 3 weeks now, the more concerned I am about him. This now seems like a long time to be in concussion protocol. So if he's not out there in a limited bait, like today is a walkthrough up at Hal. It's different. They're switching it up for some reason. Today is a walkthrough practice. At least that's what the report is. And if that's if he's not part of that walkthrough, like he's not playing this week again. And they need, especially if discipline is going to come.
But he hasn't cleared concussion protocol. They haven't made any.
Well, that's what I'm saying. But yeah, the longer this goes, this is a bigger issue than I think we thought or made out right when it started. And I think one of those two guys could have made a difference on the Hail Mary or Fail Mary, whichever way you want to look at it.
Yeah, I'm not sure about the final play. But I do think that Kyler Gordon, for instance, would have made his impact felt, and they need him back to make that kind of impact against a guy like Kyler Murray, athletic, mobile, and somebody who will make you pay down the field with his feet as much as his arm. I don't think that it's realistic to expect Jaquan Brisker to make a contribution Sunday, and I'm starting to wonder if this is just going to be the new normal for the Bears this season. He's a guy who plays so physically and with such a punishing mentality that it's hard to envision a guy coming back from concussion protocol until he does it, because those are the hardest injuries to project and predict. Offensively, I think the Bears are going to find out how much they miss Braxton Jones in the next couple weeks as they try to move on without him. I don't think that Kerryon Amagaji is ready for prime time. Maybe against the run, maybe blocking running plays on the edge in space, as they say, but holding his ground and protecting the pocket, he really struggled at times, and I think that he could be exposed, and they're going to find that weakness and exploit it if you're the Arizona Cardinals and every team moving forward. So Larry Borum still has to be a guy that you consider. What is the deal with Ryan Bates? Is he ever going to play football for the Bears? And you forget what he could do. Nate Davis might be a guy they have to go back to, but The offensive line is in more of a state of flux than you would like. The secondary could use some reinforcements, especially from Gordon. And Montez Sweat, I think he would play through whatever injury, hopefully, that is minor. But he did not finish the game healthy. So you always wonder about that. And I'm very curious now about the walkthrough aspect of today's practice because I did not realize that.
It's a good question.
Lost in the midst of so many mini controversies was the play of Caleb Williams. What was your biggest takeaway about Caleb's play against the Commanders, and what do you expect from him this week?
A couple takeaways. Number one, he's a clutch quarterback. He can, whatever that means to however you want to interpret it or define it, Caleb Williams finds a way to make plays when the clock is running down, when you need a drive, when you need a play made. I think Caleb Williams is showing signs of being a clutch quarterback. And that's something to take away from Sunday. I felt like early on, certainly the first three quarters, he was not as accurate as you would like. It was not as efficient as he was in the previous three games. And that was odd. Maybe he was in terms of managing his anxiety. Maybe it was because he was just a little bit too amped up going back home. He does get nervous, I think. I think that he does create situations and maybe figure out that the ball sails on him when he's too amped up, because that happened too many times. So I think your takeaway is he needs to stay composed. When he's in control, he's in command. And when he's in command, he's a very good quarterback. Is finding that rhythm early on. And I think when he's in charge of things early on, he's better. So if I'm Shane Waldron, I may consider starting the game no huddle, up tempo, and increasing the pace, getting your quarterback into a rhythm, because once he's into a rhythm, he's much better.
Well, I thought he had his wow throw for me in that final touchdown drive. And I believe it was the throw to Keenan Allen, and the view that they re-showed on CBS was awesome. It was Patrick Mahomes-esque. He did that shortstop, sidearm, whip the ball, perfect spiral, like threw it in between the armpit of a defender's arm, whistled it through in the hands, I believe, of Keenan Allen.
Was that Carter?
It was either Keenan Allen or Roma Dunze who caught the ball on that play. One of the two on that drive. It was one of those two plays. But it was spectacular to the point where I was like, that's the play. That's the best thing I've seen him do so far, considering the moment and everything. He had a great fourth quarter. You know, he said, and we talked about it and picked on it a little bit, or I did, he doesn't get nervous. He was nervous, or he was just playing bad to start that game in Landover, Maryland. And he recovered. So you have to give him credit for that. Each week he has gotten better. But now what the next step is I need to see him play four quarters of football. I don't think we've seen him play four good quarters yet.
Well, I think that he's playing, especially last week, that the problems on the offensive line were really glaring. And the idea that they were pressuring him on 51.6% of his pass attempts, and that pressure got to him within 2.47 seconds. That, you know, those numbers might not sound overwhelming, but the book on him is still to go after him, and they're getting there pretty quickly. At least Washington did, and that's not good. So every team will try to do the same thing. So you got to get the ball out quicker and quicker. And it seemed like it was getting worse as the game went on, to be brutally honest with you. And I do believe that he's taking more hits than you want him to. I know it's not like he's getting sacked nine times, but there was a couple of times where you're kind of watching the game and you're like, you know, throw the ball, because you just don't want him to take a hit. And he's getting dragged down, or they're running him in the middle of the field like they did at the end of the game. What are you doing? You know, come on now. So I want him protected more, and that would be both with play calling and with the offensive line. But he has the special. He did do the special. And I thought Olin did a really good job with us of breaking down all these games where he's done something at the end of the half, or he's done something at the end of the game, where you feel like, you know, you do have someone with a little something extra to his game. And that is probably the worst part about the loss, the idea that you couldn't celebrate him winning at the end.
Well, obviously, I knew that question would come up.
Oh, there's many more of those questions. You better believe it. What did you make of Bobby Wagner's comments on the Sports Business Journal's Dealmakers Conference regarding Tyrique Stevenson and Matt Eberflus?
Who would have thought the corner would be talking trash to the, you know, to the fans, that the coach wouldn't care about the play before and give us that extra 20 yards?
Wow, damning words. Are those the proper villains of the Bears' loss?
I don't know how you get away from not seeing what happened with Tyrique Stevenson and not say that, you know, given that he was supposed to be covering the guy who caught the touchdown, that he actually recovered, ran over, and tipped to him. I don't know how you get away with not saying he was at fault on that play. You know, watching him pointing at the crowd, and that came from a video that was somebody in the stands was taking a video. It was extraordinary because the play is opening up outside. But that's also on the All-22 tape. So it's not like if some fan didn't have a camera, the Bears wouldn't have known about it. You'd have known about it. And anybody that had access to that footage would have known about it. So maybe it wouldn't have been as much of a social media sensation. But yeah, and I think that Bobby Wagner is right, that Flusi letting them have the 13 yards was insane. And it put him in a position to get the ball in the end zone, and they did.
Well, gosh, I mean, I still think the villain in all of this is Tyrique Stevenson, because the coach went out of his way to tell us that he was the guy that was supposed to be blocking out the guy that ended up catching the ball. And Tyrique Stevenson was away from the play, had to be notified that the ball was in the air, tries to recover, and then is the guy that actually has a hand on the ball and tips it backwards, not forwards, not down, not left or right, tips it backwards into the hands of the guy that he was supposed to have a body on. So,
yeah, but that was fluky. And I think when you have a fluke like that, people kind of forget maybe who was involved more than they will ever forget what happened as a result of that. Tyrique Stevenson is a villain in this, but the biggest villain and the guy who's going to suffer the most embarrassment is Matt Eberflus, because there's an understanding and acceptance of things that he won't publicly acknowledge. That it was dumb for them not to have any defensive resistance on the play before the Hail Mary. Bobby Wagner's been around the league for a very long time. One of the most senior linebackers in any NFL, on any NFL roster. He knows that it's just conventional wisdom that a defense in that situation would try to keep those receivers in bounds, would try to defend the sidelines and not give up 15 free yards when you make a Hail Mary pass possible because of the distance. That's football 101. Flusi choked, and everybody knows it. And now they're going to have to deal with the repercussions of that. You don't outlive this. This is not something that you're going to be able to forget in a week or a month, probably not even a year. If and when he gets fired at the end of the season, if they don't win more than they lose, and if they don't win more than they lose, he could get fired. It will be because he embarrassed himself against the Washington Commanders by doing the wrong thing, then doubling down afterward by not being able to acknowledge the fact that he made a mistake. He never has owned this yet, and that's why people are still talking about it.
And thank God, that Bobby Wagner didn't mention that he went, they ended the game with three timeouts in their hip pocket.
Yeah, same thing.
That would have been the trifecta, right? Do you still consider the Bears contenders in the NFC North, and who is the best team in the NFC?
I do not. I don't think it's realistic to think the Bears can contend for the NFC North title. I think before Sunday, it was conceivable it was maybe a pipe dream, but you could make the argument because of their opportunities against the division opponents that they had yet to play. But what you suffered again in Washington, in Landover, Maryland, was not just a loss of a game, but a loss of confidence in the fact that the Bears can do anything that they shouldn't do, that they should win a game that they shouldn't win. They know how to lose. They don't know how to win. And teams that are contenders are teams that tell you on the field, they show you that they know how to win. We've yet to see that from the Chicago Bears. So, no, they're not in contention. They're a pretender in a division full of contenders. The Vikings are ahead of them. Certainly the Packers winning without a healthy Jordan Love are among the contenders. But the Lions are the class of the NFC North, and the Lions are the best team in the NFC.
The Lions are the best team in the NFC right now. You know, I'm going to hold out until we see that first game against the Packers at Soldier Field. If you win that, if the Bears are able to win that game, then I believe they are contenders. But I think they have to win. You know, the overall record is still going to matter in the race for the division as well, right? You know, you can't lose. So you got to win at Arizona. You got to come home and beat the Patriots. And then you got to be ready to go against the Packers. We're going to know that they're going to play three division games in 10 days, including, you know, possibly ruining our Thanksgiving against the Lions out in Detroit. So we're going to find out quick. But right now, yes, I'm going to say they are still contenders because they have yet to play a game in the division. But the division has the NFC's best team in it, and that is the Lions.
Yeah, I mean, listen, they had a three-game winning streak. They really should have made it four, but instead they found a way to give that game away, and we just went over the villains of the whole process. Do I consider the Bears contenders in the NFC North? Of course. You know, the results in the NFC North, TBD. You know, losing one game doesn't end your season. You start stacking losses. You lose in Arizona, now you got a problem. You know, this game is huge because you got to change the narrative, and I don't know that you're going to be allowed to, frankly. But you also have to win a game on the road. That's another problem you have. When you get into the division, we'll find out if they can play. They certainly had a chance to build up a lot of goodwill and improve their confidence, all the rest of it. And they've not done that. They haven't taken advantage of that opportunity. So the NFC North, we will learn more about as you go on. I think that Detroit right now is on fire. They're the best team in the division. They're the best team in the NFC. I still wonder if we're going to get anything out of San Francisco before this season is over. I still wonder if they get enough players back, if they get enough, I know there's guys that aren't coming back, but I still wonder if they can make some noise before the season is over. That would be the one team that I would hold out hope for if I were trying to evaluate the best teams in the NFC. But man, do the Lions look good. They look real good. And we'll find out.
It's a fair question, David.
That's the voice of Bruce Levine, wondering what his thoughts are on the new White Sox skipper. What do you think of the way the Yankees responded, down 3-0 to the Dodgers in a World Series that has not lived up to the hype until potentially last night?
I think the Yankees got to win two more games before I am even interested. I know that sounds bad. They did a great job of getting a game, but I mean, this is just you look at Aaron Judge and the slump that he's gone through in the playoffs and in the World Series in particular, and you wonder, is that how he's going down? Is that how he's going out? That's rough stuff. Basically, they had two guys that could hit. They had two guys that you had to worry about in their entire lineup. And then yesterday, they ended up getting 7 of their 11 runs from the bottom three bats in the lineup. I don't know that you can count on that in the World Series, but it was just good to see other guys get involved, right? that Grand Slam was really important. But I think it's a long. I think they've lost a lot of goodwill, and I think that even if they win, they get back to L.A. and it's over.
Well, it's a series now. They were saying, "What the heck?" That was the word after the game. The Yankees, "What the heck? Let's just go for it. What the heck?" The bats are alive. The bottom of the order did it. And David, you and I don't remember if this was on or off the air, talked about it. Like, what in the world are they saving Cole for? Like, why wouldn't they have thrown Cole last night, especially with the Dodgers, you know, going with a bullpen game? Why wouldn't you have pitched your ace in a do-or-die situation at home? Well, it worked out.
Worked out.
Because now you have your ace. This is why you paid Cole all that money, is a game like this, a game five at home, do or die, and you win and you make the series go back to LA. So I picked the Dodgers. I'm cheering for the Dodgers, but tonight I'm cheering for the Yankees for the love of sport. Like, I want this to keep going. And now guess what? This is must watch TV tonight.
I agree with that.
Because Cole is pitching. That's why. If it was some guy that I didn't know, you know, Brad Smith, or, you know, a bullpen day, I wouldn't care as much. I'd be like, Mully, like, wake me up if it gets back to L.A. But because Gerrit Cole's throwing, I'm all in. Again, another guy right on the edge of the Hall of Fame that we talked about when this thing started. This could be his Hall of Fame game tonight.
Freddie Freeman's closer, but I agree with that.
Oh, Freddie Freeman's in.
He's in.
David, I'll fill him. I'll put him on your ballot.
Will you do that? Okay, yeah, 5 years,
can,
call me.
You can just let me know. Right.
I'll be eating an Uncrustable.
Is he done then? Is Freddie retiring? Is that what you're saying?
No, but he's in. I mean, he could strike out every time he's up for the rest of his
life.
To the Hall of Fame.
Gerrit Cole needs to go 9 innings tonight. He needs to remove the doubt. They need to look at this as a old school ace of the staff, season on the line, pitching assignment.
You're not taking him out after 88 pitches tonight.
Go 9. He can go 115 pitches tonight.
And maybe this is going to make the manager look very smart, by the way, that he took him out after 88 pitches.
Nothing is going to make that happen.
He'll feel like he's got all winter to rest because you let it all out tonight. If you're Gerrit Cole, you show people why you're worth the money you're worth, or you're getting paid. Why they invested all those, $300 million or so in Gerrit Cole?
A lot of Uncrustables.
By the way, yeah, it is. Ohtani looks hurt. He looks terrible.
Yeah, he didn't look
good. And he looks like he's playing through some pain. I like the way the Yankees responded. Anthony Volpe, young shortstop, came through in the clutch after Anthony Rizzo flew out to the shortstop with the bases loaded. Goodness sakes, Riz. I think the...
Hard to hit in that ballpark. Oh, no.
No, it's not. Fly ball to right field is a homer. I mean, and that was the only park that Will Smith hit that ball to right field and would have gone out of. Yeah, I'm in for game 6. I want this to go back to L.A., not just because I picked the Yankees, but I'm not ready for this World Series that we thought would be the greatest since 1982 to be over yet. So, yeah, Gerrit Cole, entertain us tonight and shut down that Dodgers lineup because we need to go back to L.A.
The MVPs are down, one by injury.
Yeah, I think it's a good question.
How badly will the Bulls miss Lonzo Ball, who sprained his wrist and will miss at least 10 days? Who now needs to step up?
Well, I think it's a shame that Lonzo Ball was just making an impact and now he's got to sit out. But I think that if it, in an odd way, helps his knee get used to the, and his body get used to the wear and tear of an NBA game, maybe next time when he comes back, 16-minute stint can become 20 minutes or 18 become 22. He's better. The Bulls are better with him on the floor. So this doesn't have to be a huge setback. It's a long season. Who steps up? I think probably you look at that rotation. If it goes 10, maybe Dalen Terry gets more minutes. Maybe Julian Phillips, who was good the other night, plays some more. Ayo Dosunmu is going to be a contributor with or without Lonzo Ball. But it probably opens up an opportunity for somebody like Terry, who wasn't really a part of the rotation. You'd like to see Bezelis contribute a little bit more, but he has been somebody looks like a rookie early on, so maybe that's not realistic. But hopefully Lonzo Ball can come back. I'm just relieved that it is his wrist and not his knee that we're talking about.
Great point. Wrist, not the knee. Wrist, not the knee. I'm sure everybody saw the headline and immediately thought, oh no, the knee. I think it's Ayo. I think Ayo's minutes will double. I don't know that... I don't know that Billy wants to get too deep into that bench. Now, I know they're playing at a frenetic pace, so he may not have a choice, but I'm guessing Io's a pretty well-conditioned young man, and I think he can handle it.
You know, I think it's Coby White. I think he needs to hold the ball more. I think that he could be leading the second team if you wanted to go that route. I think he needs to score. If he scores, they win. And I think he needs to play well and more consistently. Listen, they're 500. You know, I'm very curious to see if they can keep that sort of momentum going. And I like the way that they're getting on, you know, getting out and playing everyone and scoring and shooting quick and all that stuff. It's fun to watch. I think that Io is also a guy that I think he's really come into his own and has improved as a player, and I think he's ready to do more. And I think Josh Giddey has to be better with no Lonzo. So I think there are a combination of players. Dalen Terry, he can defend, and he's very game, and he's got some bounce to him. But yeah, I think ultimately when Coby plays well, they look really good. So hopefully that happens. All right, we've got the extra point, and we'll do that next. Mully and Hall on the Score.